Yeah. It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on. Peace.
Well, yes. Oh, yes. I'm back. 2 weeks. I've been not here, but I'm here now. Hello, everyone, and welcome once again. Welcome once again on a Thursday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am JT, a.k.a. The Master. And as always, if you listen to this, you know what it is. This is the FSP Crew Show. We got a great show in store for you tonight. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is the place to be if you want to talk to me or either way you want to put it, my esteemed co-host, my fellow Jersey guy, Jeff and Jerry, and Jeff the Joker's along with me, and to carry this conversation. Hello, Jeff. How you doing, my man?
Hey, Jerry. Happy to be back.
Oh, yeah. Oh, besides the telephone number, I gave you that. We also have a chat room. It's for your convenience. Lay your knowledge in the chat room. Ask a question. Make a statement. You can do anything you like in there. Just remember, whatever you put in is what you're going to get out. So adjust accordingly. Now, we're going to be talking about the NBA because the NBA draft, the new blood's coming in, and some old blood is being moved around. We're going to be talking about trades and guys opting out and seeing what's going to happen with these guys, where they're going to opt out and possibly land. So without further ado, let's get to it. Now, just before we came on the show, I think it started probably by 7:45 or give or take somewhere between, obviously somewhere between before 8 o'clock, the NBA draft took place. And the Cleveland Cavaliers, luckily, were on the clock. And they were off the clock, meaning that once the clock expired, it took another 2 minutes to bring in the number one pick. Don't know. I mean, in my opinion, you had two choices. The one they picked and the one they didn't pick, quite naturally. So the one they did pick was Andrew Wiggins, and he's a Canadian-born athlete out of University of Kansas, a shooting guard, a dynamic player, only been in the college for 1 year, did the minimum, father of former NBA player, and son of a two-time Olympic champion, meaning his mother. So he's got some heritage behind him. I should say he's got some genes behind him, athletic genes, of speed and quickness, and also of basketball ability. I don't know if you know too much about Andrew Wiggins, the shooting guard from Kansas, but, yep.
You know,
what's your thoughts?
I don't know a ton about him, but he lived up to the hype and didn't crack under the pressure because this time last year, everybody was saying he was going to be a lottery pick, and, you know, he has a 1 year at Kansas, and boom, he's the number one pick. So, but the thing is, you know, you like the genes on the guy, of course, but you know that's just part of it. Because if that was the most important thing, then every guy in the NBA would be the son of a former NBA player, and that's not the case, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, talk about genes. A lot of people forget you know, Kobe's dad played in the NBA. I mean,
right.
he wasn't a great player, and then he went on to play in Italy for a long time. And then his uncle on his mom's side was played in the NBA. He wasn't a big star either, Chubby Cox. That was his uncle, so he's got NBA on both sides. And, you know, yeah, that with his mentality, it's not surprising he became a great player.
Mm-hmm. And quite naturally, like they said on ESPN, whoever Cleveland took first of the top two, which was Andrew Wiggins and Jabari Parker, the Milwaukee Bucks were going to take the other. So quite naturally, Cleveland took Andrew Wiggins, from shooting guard from Kansas, and Milwaukee in turn held true to what they said. They took the outstanding, and he was a one-and-done player, from the University of Duke, the 6'8", Jabari Parker. Reach 8'8", wingspan of 7 feet, highly touted. He easily could have gone number one. Your thoughts, Jeff?
I think some people think Parker isn't a great defensive player, but the fact is he only has a one-year body of work. And, yeah, like you said, you know, one and done. And it's got to make it a little harder for the teams to draft based on that. But, you know, that's the way the game is now. And then at pick three, the Sixers roll the dice with the injured big man, also from the University of Kansas. And, you know, me, you know, I think early in a draft or whatever you want to play, it's safe. And I don't know. But if this Embiid, if he could stay healthy, and he could be the next great big man. But, you know, all I'm thinking is Greg Oden, Sam Bowie, you know.
Yep.
Because, I don't know.
Bill
it's
Walton.
A seven-footer with a bad foot you don't want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, Jeff, if I'm not mistaken, this is not the first time that he has injured his foot or feet. So hopefully this doesn't turn into a chronic problem. And just like you named those unfortunate individuals who were drafted and had checkered careers, some of them better than others, in the NBA, this guy's very slight. Wingspan, he's 7'5", his wingspan. 7 foot, 250 pounds. He's very slight. He's not a real big guy. I imagine that hopefully they can put some weight on him, and that doesn't affect the health of his feet. And he can sustain extra weight on in his body. Otherwise, the gamble, and I totally agree, okay? This is the first round. This is supposed to be a stud guy. In my opinion, just like you said, you shouldn't be gambling and taking a shot unless you have some extremely good medical reports on this guy, that whatever issue he has now is minimal. You don't make this move. Not the third pick in the first round. But I'm not getting paid millions of dollars to make those type of decisions. Neither you. This guy's is gambling. Gambling with his. I would say he's gambling with his job, because anyone who takes a player that's injured with the number three pick is really gambling on his job, and he's rolling the dice, and he's putting it all in, I should say, because the owner, I would think, would be a little skeptical. His coaching staff, I would think, would be a little skeptical about this guy, unless, like I said previously, unless they have good health reports or something that convinces them that this is a good pick and not as much of a risk as a lot of people assume it is. So we'll wait and see. he's a big man, and everybody can use a big man, especially the Sixers. Very young team, and we'll see how it goes. Then they go back, and they go to the out west again, meaning the Orlando Magic, picking up a power forward from the University of Arizona named Aaron Gordon, who is thinking that he may be a not sure if he will be a good fit with Orlando, from what I'm reading here. I guess he's a pretty versatile player. He's 6'9", 220. Got a wingspan of 7 feet. He's got a bigger wingspan than a bid. He's got about the same wingspan
as a
bid.
That's a lanky dude.
He's got a reach of 8 feet 9 inches. Jesus Christ. And he's another freshman. You know, I just heard something on ESPN. I'm trying to think. Let me just recall what I heard here. Adam Silver was being, and you know who this I'm talking about, Jeff, was being interviewed by the big man on WFAN. I think he's on Fox One now. Whatever, Mike Francesa, and one of the things that he had brought up was the thought that these kids, 18, 19 years old, that he along with the players are looking to or trying to get the players on board to increase the age of a college player from coming into the NBA from, I guess it's 19 now, with a year under their belt in college play, to raising it up to 20. And if that happens, you know, that's just like saying if you raise the age, then in essence, you're really raising the amount of time they have to spend in college to 2 years. Rather than say, we want you in college 2 years, we're going to raise the age. So a kid who plays as a freshman turns 19 sometime in his freshman year. And then he said, well, he's rubbing his hands because I'm going to opt out and make some millions going into the NBA. If by chance it's negotiated with the players that they increase the age from 19 to 20, that kid who was rubbing his hands is going to hold his head. Now he's got to stay in college another year or get out of college, which would make no sense, and go play overseas or somewhere for a year and then come back and play. But we'll have to wait and see if it takes place. But that was in the conversation that I had with what they had on the radio, Mike Francesa and Adam Silver before the draft. What's your thoughts on that?
You know, this is something that's been discussed by a lot of people. I mean, I'd like to see a system where, you know, college players are free to come to the NBA, but they don't usually leave early, and if they do, they're big stars, and it's maybe they're skipping their senior year, let's say, not 3 years. I'm not sure about the legality of it because, and also the hypocrisy of it, because when you're 18, you know, you can get drafted and you can get killed in a war, but they won't let you play in the NBA. And,
right.
You know, there's young, you know, there's not many, but once in a while there'll be some kid 18, well, young person 18 years old or even younger playing pro tennis. Nobody's worrying about that, you know. But I guess if you're a college player and you prove yourself to be worthy of a first round pick, you can't blame them for out of fear of injury. You know, the thing is, it wasn't well publicized, but there were, I think Ralph Sampson was one. There's many others, and you know that was, you know, Ralph Sampson played 4 years in college. But that was fairly common back then. But he did, I'm fairly certain, he had an insurance policy. You don't need a lot of money. You just need some kind of assets. Like if your parents own a home, they could use the home as collateral for the insurance. And a lot of guys have been able to insure themselves and stay in college. And I'm fine with that, you know. But, you know, it's definitely affected the NBA game. They're getting less developed players, less known about players. It's affected the college game because, you know, it's affected the talent pool, no doubt. And I'm not the only one who thinks this. When you're watching the college tournament, if you see a senior, you're like, oh, he must not be very good.
Right.
Because the good players don't stay 4 years. I don't know what the answer is, and if they do add another year, if guys really don't want to go to college, I mean, they can go to colleges where they can go through the motions, or maybe they'll take a few bucks to go to Europe and get some insurance at the same time. You know, I don't know. You know, I don't think it's changed much since they made a one-year college requirement. I don't know. But, you know, it's just – but the thing, getting back has changed a lot. And Wiggins, he played college in Kansas, but he was born and raised in Canada. So I don't think he'd be considered a foreign player because he played his college ball in the United States. But Utah drafted a player from Australia. And I think even for a serious NBA fan, it's hard to know the foreign talent. But with the 5 pick, Utah got an Australian point guard. And that's something that years ago, there were very few foreign players in the NBA draft.
Now it's very commonplace, Jeff.
And
I'm looking at one analyst said they needed a potential franchise player, and I think they got him. Now, I'm not too familiar with Dante Exum, like he said, he's from Melbourne, Australia. 6'6", 196 pounds. You know, the thing about, and I could be mistaken, but the thing about a foreign-born or foreign player, in my opinion, now I could be mistaken, but and correct me if I am, I would think they were maybe a little bit more mature for the simple fact that they were probably playing with older guys more often than the guys that got drafted before him. I'm not exactly sure if he played in I imagine he did play in some type of college, but I imagine also he played in some type of men's league that with older players and got some type of experience around older guys. This guy's only 18, just like the other four we talked about, 18 years old. It's unbelievable. 18, 19 years old, these guys, he'll be 19 in the middle of July. So he'll be 19 coming into the NBA. That these guys have the ability that they have and are going to get paid millions for it. And are they ready for that weight? Of making that much money and being able to handle the pressures that come with it.
Well, like Don King used to say, I think he still does, only in America. And there was a star player, I think it was Tracy McGrady, who said the first paycheck he ever had was 7 figures. Can you imagine?
Wow.
And, you know, and people talk about, you know, some of these guys getting big heads. And that's why, you know, the teams want to get to meet the young men and, you know, see what they're about, see what their values
mm-hmm.
are,
mm-hmm.
And not just base it on, you know, newspaper articles or whatever. But, you know, I'm a very honest person. And if you would have given me millions of dollars in my late teens, early 20s, I'm afraid to think what would have happened. You know,
well, you...
there would have been some problems.
Jeff, let me put it this way. 18, 19 years old, getting that amount of money, I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to you now. And I can honestly say that because I know what my mindset was. I know how what my attitude was. And to have that much money, seven figures as my first paycheck. Now, you have to also see that unless he's had some absolutely humbling situations, these guys, they have no perspective on what it means to get that amount of money and to be responsible, about it, because and really realize that what you're doing is a unique situation in most people's everyday life. And at 18, 19 years old, when for the most part, when you've shown the ability early on, and just like if you're in baseball, just like you're in football, been pampered or been taken care of because you have that unique ability in whatever sport you're at. A lot of guys, not all of them, but there's a lot of guys don't have a perspective on what the everyday person goes through. So they can go buck wild with this money, not realizing that all it takes is one turn of your knee the wrong way and your career is over. These guys think that for the most part, when I was young, I thought I was this age, I thought I was invincible. Nothing was going to ever happen to me because I'm 18, 19 years old, and I knew it all. And now I have it all because I got millions of dollars in the bank, and nobody can tell me anything. It's amazing that 18, 19 year olds are getting paid like this year in and year out. Just hopefully they have good people behind them, good handlers and the organizations that teach them how to take care of themselves, meaning financially, mentally, and physically, in order to have a long career for one. Now, the next pick, Jeff, and I don't know if you're following this just like I am, is extremely interesting pick that I definitely got to talk about. The Boston Celtics were on the clock at number six with a very young team with a lot of needs, and they went and picked up one Marcus Smart, who happens to be a point guard, and I think it's... he's from Oklahoma State, 6'3", 227. And this has got to be, I wouldn't say shot across the bow, but I saw something over the Internet, I think it was yesterday, at least yesterday, maybe the day before yesterday, about the possibility of Rajon Rondo getting traded. And this could mean that the Celtics will ramp up efforts to trade Rajon Rondo. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that has to be because, as you know, excellent as Rondo is and as promising as Smart is, you don't draft a point guard number six in the draft to be a backup point guard. And then,
right.
Of course, and this is something I didn't get when I was real little watching basketball. You said, well, you play them both. And very rarely does two point guards work. I mean, maybe you see it once in a blue moon if a team's in a bind, maybe at the end of the game if they don't want a turnover, but not on a regular basis because these are guys who are good with the ball in their hand. And it usually does not work out well. I mean, years ago, the Knicks had a similar situation. They had Mark Jackson. It was very good. And I think it was a late first-round pick. They went with Rod Strickland because I think he was probably just the best available guy. And in glimpses, Strickland looked really good. I mean, he ended up playing in the league for a long time. But he made a big stink because he didn't want to spend his whole career backing up Mark Jackson. And to tell you the truth, I can't blame the guy.
Right.
And I remember thinking, oh, they got to put those two in together at the same time. But it just it doesn't usually work. So, yeah, looks like the Celtics, they got something up their sleeve. And the Lakers drafted Julius Randle, the power forward from Kentucky. And this is historic because the Lakers don't usually draft so early. I can't remember. I think this is their worst season since they've moved to Los Angeles. And they also frequently trade away the picks for veteran players, and it usually
right.
works out very well.
Right.
And this year they still have their first pick, and they didn't bring in anybody to take Kobe's place, and they went with Julius Randle, who I think is considered a pretty good prospect. I think he, and he's another, well, I almost assume he's a one and done if he's from Kentucky, but, you know, that's the way
one and
the game
done.
Now.
He's a freshman, 19 years old. He'll be 20 come this November, so he's an older freshman, but 6'9", 234, I imagine that's a factory, you know, that Kentucky and John, the coach in Kentucky is a one and done coach for the most part. Teaches them somewhat of a pro game. Teaches them, tries to get them to play together, and then they move on from there. He's at from Dallas, Texas, so he's going to go to the Lakers, which is not that far from Dallas, Texas. He's going to go a little further west and play with the Black Mamba, Kobe Bryant, and hopefully he has a strong constitution for the simple fact that Kobe Bryant demands a lot from whoever plays with him. And I imagine this guy, number 7, has some ability and will be playing with an older but still an effective player in Kobe Bryant, and hoping and trying to get the Lakers back into the playoffs, or at least a shot to get in the playoffs. And then in the 8th pick, and I don't know too much about this guy here. He's from Sacramento. Picked this guy with the number 8 pick. Guy named called, he's a shooting guard, Nick Stauskas, from, like I said, University of Michigan. Looks like he's a foreign player, foreign born, maybe not, quite naturally, he came from Michigan. 6'7", you know, he's 20 years old, he's a sophomore, so we had a couple years in the college ranks before he moved over. But he's a shooting guard going to Sacramento. And, you know, I'm looking at all these guys, Jeff. We're talking about 6'8", 6'9", 6'7", 6'6". I don't see anybody 6'5". Let me see. Smart was 6'5" or not. He's 6'3", okay. He's the shortest of the guys who've been drafted, being a point guard. But the point I'm making is these guys all seem like they're similar, give or take an inch or two, 6'7", 6'8", 6'9". You got one guy 7-foot center, but all these other guys are probably athletic, and swing men that can probably play more than one position. Maybe they may not play more than one position, but they can play more than one position, and with a little bit of big guys sprinkled in. Now, like I said, Ibid is a gamble, and now that the Charlotte has picked up Noah Vonleh, who's now this is a guy is a 6'10" power forward, 247, so he's not a real big guy. Meaning size-wise, height-wise, yes. Size-wise, 247. I guess he's pretty decent. He's probably going to put some more weight on. But as most of these guys, with the sprinkle of guys that are 20, this guy is 18 years old, soon to be 19 in the late part of August. Young guys, man. Young guys. All these guys getting drafted. Where are all the guys that are 3- and 4-year players in this draft? Where are they? I mean, you mean to tell me all these guys that are 18, 19 years old, first-year players, are the ones getting drafted in the top 10? One sophomore, and that was a Nick Stauskas, was the only player, and he got drafted 8th by Sacramento. Every one of these guys up until now has been a freshman.
Nick Stauskas, he's another young gentleman from Canada.
Yes.
And the Sixers have another pick. They, besides the number 3 pick, they got another pick at 10. I wonder who they're going to take.
Well, they took a shot on his center. I imagine they're going to take somebody that's probably either a small forward or a power forward in that, and probably 6'8", 6'9", 6'7", in that range. They're on the clock, and they're going to be up in a little over 2 minutes. The one thing I don't know if, and it's a conspiracy type of thing, Jeff, because they did it for the most part in the NFL, and I can see the NBA doing the same thing, to drag it out. They tell these teams, take your time with the pick. You got to think most of these teams know who they're going to pick, especially in the first round. They have a pretty good idea. They've only been studying this for God knows how long. So they either to go with the top player on the board, if that's taken. These teams always have a plan B, C, D, and maybe not necessarily in that order, but they should always have a plan. So you think, and I'm thinking this, that Adam Silver or the NBA is saying, take your time with these picks. We're giving you X amount of time, but we don't want you to pick it right away because we got to fill a time slot.
It might be, but also, I mean, this draft is supposed to be so stacked with talent
right.
that, you know, teams think, hey, you know, what's the hurry? I'll wait a couple minutes, maybe my phone will ring and somebody's going to make me a really nice offer. I mean, it's that kind of draft. I mean, the Knicks yesterday made a pretty big trade with Dallas, and I hate to lose Wilson Chandler at a Chandler at center. You hate to lose him, but the good news is they get rid of Raymond Felton, which I thought that guy's practically untradeable. And also in the deal, the Knicks get 2 second-round draft picks, which second-round draft picks really aren't worth much in the NBA, but they're kind of like scratch-offs. So hopefully one of those guys – they really are. I mean, you know, like
that's funny. I like that. I like that.
I mean, that's why. I mean, there's no draft after the third round anymore because they realized after the second, the odds are very slim of guys sticking around in the league.
Right.
I mean, usually, if a player gets traded, if you're going to trade a second round pick, you're getting a real backup, like not even a guy in the rotation. You know, it's a way of making a deal for a little something, but a real little something. You can't trade a guy for nothing, you know. So I just like the idea, even though they're just second-round picks, and one of them I think is at the beginning of the second round, so that's even better. I like the idea of the Knicks having a couple picks. I mean, I don't have any delusions, but you never know. They could, you know, if they could take a chance and something great could work out, or they could package that with something else and do something, cause especially when you have new management. A lot of times they're looking to make a deal, and I was not fond of Felton. You know, believe me, if they made me the president of the Knicks, at my first day I would have said, trade that guy for a six-pack of beer. I don't care if it's warm. you know, and they get a good point guard, which they need. They get rid of a lousy point guard. They get a couple of second-round picks thrown in. I think it's a good deal as far as the cap goes. I like it. But now they think, you know, Dallas wanted Chandler back, and, you know, they're you know, Cuban, he likes to wheel and deal, and they might be trying to pull something. And, you know, the big drama is going to be, you know, where's Melo going to go and where's LeBron going to go. So, I don't know. Somebody's going to do something this offseason. There's going to be something interesting.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a – not for me, because I really don't follow the NBA that much, but the general media that follows the NBA, especially the decision or the second decision now, whether LeBron stays with Miami and read up with Miami or they go, I mean, the entourage, LeBron's entourage goes in somewhere else, L.A., Chicago, Houston. I mean, his choices are whatever he wants to make them. I got to believe that teams are going to be putting feelers out there to find out what's the interest of LeBron coming to their team. I know I saw somewhere that at least Chicago and Houston were going to have a visit from Carmelo. So he's going to try the waters too to see what kind of deal he can get. Like I said, you're going to have to wait and see. I know LeBron had a meeting with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. No information was out about what they talked about, but quite naturally, when those three guys get together, they're exchanging what each other's mindset is and what they're looking for or what they're going to try to get. And it was very funny. I listened to a conversation again on the radio yesterday about and it was with the same gentleman. Francesa was talking to somebody that's in tune with the NBA. I think he was a beat reporter for the Miami Heat. I don't recall the name. And he was asking him that, in essence, LeBron was, in essence, when he opted out, he was telling Pat Riley, what are you going to do for me? Give me a list of the people that you're looking to bring into here, and I tell you which ones I like and which ones I don't like. And in essence, this guy was saying, and he really said it, I'm not saying it verbatim, but he's saying besides being a basketball player, LeBron is going to be playing the general manager too. So you know that Pat Riley doesn't want to lose him, for one. And then if the Keith Creighton actually he's opted out, so he's a free agent. So there's going to be other teams that are going to be clamoring for him, like I said before. And now we're going to go through this whole summer until whatever decision gets made about decision on 2014 number two. So I don't know. And let's get back to the draft. Okay, Philadelphia picked up a point guard from Louisiana Lafayette? Alfred
the Raging
Payton?
Cajuns, that's right.
Alfred Payton,
6'4". He's an old-timer. He's a junior.
Oh, that, see? Someone must have been listening to me, Jeff. Someone must have been listening to me, Jeff. This guy, you're right, he's a junior, 6'4", 185 pounds. This guy is slight, 185 pounds, 6'4". Louisiana Lafayette. I don't know too much about this kid. I imagine he's pretty versatile. He's got some ball handling skills. Maybe pretty decent on defense. A lot of these guys, especially these life type guys that have a lot of athleticism, are great on the break. And weak on the defense. Not all of them, but a lot of them are because their forte is offense, and for the most part, that's how they got drafted to where they're at, because of their offensive prowess, not necessarily because of their defense. If you're a big man, you have to show some, I'm talking about 6'10 and above, you got to show some prowess on the defensive side to be able to be picked in the first round like Ibid. And this other guy, what's his name? Vonleh, who Indiana picked, the power forward. He's from Indiana, but Charlotte picked. I imagine Ibid showed some defensive prowess along with this power forward from Indiana, but these guys are not big guys. None of these guys seem like they have the enough weight on them to sustain themselves in the NBA. It seems like they're all going to have to put on some weight or some muscle to play with the big boys. Your thoughts on this guy?
Oh, yeah.
The Louisiana Lafayette
NBA,
point guard.
Yeah, the NBA definitely, the weightlifting is mandatory, especially for the younger guys, and they're going to start these guys right away. It's hard to believe. When I first started watching sports, that there were a lot of coaches in various sports against weightlifting. I mean, it sounds now. I mean, the thing is, like a lot of things, there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it.
Right.
You might remember this. Like, there was a lot of basketball and baseball coaches who didn't want their guys lifting weights because they were afraid they'd get muscle bound or whatever. And the thing is, if you do it the right way, that's not going to be a problem. And it's just, not that, everybody's, bench pressing 400 pounds, but I think almost every athlete uses some type of weight training now. I mean, it's just part of training,
Mm-hmm.
And it's all different things. It's not necessarily just, doing bench presses and squats and whatever. I mean, I saw something in hockey a long time ago, the NHL, they weren't big on weight training, and then they got their butts kicked by the Russians a couple of times. And, the Russians were doing all kinds of interesting and creative training. Like, they'd have guys skating with a big weight tied behind them and stuff like that. And then the NHL realized, hey, we got to get with this,
That's true. That is so true.
I don't think at this point in the draft they're looking for it. But later on, I think they look for guys with some versatility. But I think, though, in the NBA, most guys in the NBA can play another position. But also, I think to stick around in the NBA, you have to be legitimate at one position. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
It's good to have it. And once in a while, there's a guy who could play three positions, which can help you out in a pinch. But usually, most guys have their main position, and they're very good at it. And I remember many years ago, NBA they were showing a CBA game, and that was a good league before Isaiah Thomas ruined it. And, you know, there were some, you know, somewhat known players in that CBA game. And one of the commentators said something interesting. He said a lot of guys were in the CBA because they were tweeners. They weren't legitimate NBA players at one position, like a guy who's kind of between a power forward and a center, or a
right.
guy who's between a point guard and a shooting guard. And I was like, wow, he's right, you know?
Yeah, you're right. That's what I was talking about, Jeff. When I got I saw all these players, they seemed inch or two difference in the first four because Ibid got number three, but for the majority of these guys, except for the point guards, which was 6'3", 6'4", a couple of point guards, most of these guys fall in the same range. 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", sprinkling with a couple, one or two guys that are 6'10", 7 foot. But 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", to me, tells me that they're versatile players. They can play multiple positions. They may be stronger at one position, but because of that type of size, he had 6'9", he had Magic Johnson as a point guard at one point. Now, and then that was a unique situation because most point guards before and after that were a lot shorter than that, 6'7", 6'6", 6'5", and below. 6'9", is an extraordinarily tall point guard, but Magic Johnson, 6'9", was the exact thing I'm talking about. He played all five positions at one point. So... and I'm thinking they get these guys, they can mix and match because of the fact is I would say they're tweeners, but they're because they're 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", I mean that's only an inch, a couple inches between 6'7", and 6'9". So depending on what they do the best, they may not be swingmen, but in my opinion, my mindset tells me somebody who that height or give or take is a very versatile player, especially when they aren't that big. Meaning they don't have a lot of muscle. They're a little less than 200 pounds or slightly over 200 pounds, which is tells me they're a very athletic type of guy and can play different positions.
You don't know how these guys are going to develop and what kind of plans the team has and what the needs are going to be. I'll tell you though, there's Iman Shumpert for the Knicks, who I happen to like. I don't think
I like him
a lot. 100%. I don't think he was 100% last year, you know, because he had a serious knee injury. I mean, he played. He looked okay. And maybe next year he'll be even better. And it just, you know what cracks me up? That last year the Knicks needed, they had some needs, and somebody saying, trade Shumpert. It's like, you got a good young player. You got one like that. Keep him. You know?
Right.
It's like, it just didn't make sense to me. This is what you want to build around, you know, good, young, healthy players. I mean, he's not back to 100%, but it's not like he's been injured for for 5 years in a row or whatever. Hopefully he'll put that behind him. But you know what I liked about him, and this is something I notice about great athletes.
What's that?
You know, they have a certain amount of pride, and they like a challenge, and they like to prove people wrong. And occasionally, the Knicks have used Shumpert at the point guard, which is not his best position or his natural position. But he takes pride in the fact that he can do it. You know, he says, "Hey, I played in college and I could do it." You know, and I like that. And a lot of the great athletes are like that, for whatever reasons. And I think it's a good trait. And you know, once in a while, they'll put him out there. But you know, it's not his best position. And it's the thing is. It probably wouldn't work out in the long run, but you look at the Knicks, he's good, and Hardaway Jr. is good, it'd be nice if they could get them on the court together more, you know? But you never know. You don't know what Phil Jackson's going to do. So hopefully they'll finally get some. And I hate this term, but it's very appropriate to Knicks. They got to get some chemistry. You know what I'm saying? Like, guys, and it doesn't mean they got to be best buddies, but just guys whose games fit well together. Because that wasn't happening with Melo and Amare. It just wasn't working out too well. But they got to just find the right guys and make them fit, get young, healthy guys, whatever, and, you know, quit bringing in you know, head cases and whatever. I'm not a big fan of J.R. Smith, and like I suspected, he stayed out of trouble for 1 year so he can get a big contract, and then he was a big jerk last year, so.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you hear all the local rumors, and you know, the talk was about J.R. Smith. The Knicks made him that very lucrative offer just to keep Melo happy because Melo's friendly with him and they got the same agent.
Right.
Look where it's getting them. Now they could lose Melo. So what a joke.
Yep. And the next pick, which happens to be, we talked about Elfrid Payton from Louisiana Lafayette. Denver was on the clock at pick 11, and they picked up Doug McDermott, a small forward from Creighton University, 6'8", 218. Wow. If I'm not mistaken, I think this guy can fill it. And he's another guy, 6'8". But guess what, Jeff? Guess what?
What?
Age 22, the first senior off the board.
Well, probably because he's from a smaller school, so.
And you know what? I'm going to be very interested in how this guy plays, because I'm a firm believer in guys, the longer they're in college, the better experience they get, and if they make it to the NBA, the better NBA players they are. And this guy, he played for 4 years, even though it's for Creighton, he played for 4 years, and that experience, without all the pressures of being in a pro league, is invaluable. When he comes to the team that he got drafted, which it happens to be the Denver Nuggets. And that's going to be very interesting to see the career of Doug McDermott from the start of training camp on out. So that's the first senior off the board. And we have another pick in. From Croatia, another foreign player, a power forward that got drafted by the Orlando Magic, Dario Saric, power forward, 6'10", 223 pounds. Oh, he is a rail, 223 pounds at 6'10". Oh, my God. He is a very skilled wing, great size for his position. Has extraordinary court vision. A lot of these foreign players that played for a while, he's only 20 years old. Excellent ball handler and good rebounder. And I'm surprised about this because I'm seeing what his negatives are. Needs to improve his jump shot. And quite naturally, if you're 6'10", 223 pounds, you need to add strength, can be turnover prone, and not an elite athlete. For the most part, a lot of these foreign players, especially the bigger ones, are not athletic. But I'm really surprised that he doesn't have a good outside jumper. Your thoughts, Jeff?
You know, I'm sure Orlando saw, you know, the good side of the coin, whatever. You know, these foreign players, I'm not sure about Croatia, but supposedly some of these countries have very good minor league systems, and
yes,
that's why so many of these players have done so well. I mean, this
right.
one in particular I'm not familiar with. He's almost like a tweener because he'll get pushed around at the power forward, and he's probably not quick enough to be a small forward. But
right.
he said the same thing about Larry Bird, and he did all right. And that's the thing. You just, as much as you scout and analyze, you know, it's really hard to know for sure. But I'll tell you, the Spurs, the roster they have this year, that kind of almost looks like the NBA of the future, because I think six or seven guys on that roster are foreign players. And, you know, you remember, I mean, I remember when I was a kid, there was a handful of foreign-born players. You know, Ernie Grunfeld, I mean, he moved from Romania when he was a kid. You know, Sven Nader, a few others. Michael mm-hmm. Thompson, the big man, was from the Bahamas. And see, that the first foreign guys, I think, was a lot of big men. I mean, Sven Nader didn't even see a basketball until he was about 14. But the game is increased in popularity all over the world, and you know, now we're getting star players from all over the world.
Oh, I'm seeing here that Dario Saric, the one we talked about, signed a 3-year deal with the Turkish basketball team, and probably won't be playing in the NBA for another 2 years.
That's really a prospect.
And I'm thinking here that Orlando Magic will take Dario and will send him to, the 76ers for Elfrid Payton. So the point guard, Louisiana Lafayette, he may have gotten drafted by the Philadelphia 76ers, but they exchanged draft picks. Orlando Magic and Philadelphia 76ers. And I imagine there's going to be some other wheelings and dealings in the coming hour or whatever that this takes place. We got 3 minutes left in the show. And also, let me put it this way. The Magic and Sixers are also swapping future picks in this deal, including a 2017 first-round pick. Don't know exactly what the whole contents of the trades between Orlando and the Philadelphia 76ers, but they definitely trade the first-round picks, and 2017 first-round pick is involved in that also. All right, we move on to Minnesota, which is picking Lucky 13, and they pick Zach LaVine. From the point guard, 6'6", 181. This is a guy, another freshman. Freshman point guards, I got a problem with. You know, I'm thinking that this guy needs to have some experience. And you only have 1 year of college experience in the point guard position. 6'6", 181, so he's a slight guy. Another one that is probably a long, lanky combo guard, explosive leaper, that's a positive. Excellent size for a point guard, that's true. He has a quick first step, good shooter with range, and quite naturally, like I'm saying, he's 181, needs to add strength, can focus too much on scoring, we're running the point, and that comes with experience running, being a point guard. That's why I'm calling into question these guys that are young, especially freshmen being point guards, and questionable shot selection. That all comes with experience. And you got to be that floor general. And to go into the NBA as a freshman, this is your sophomore year that you're going into the NBA. You're 19 years old, and you're going to be a point guard with guys that are older than you, and you can't focus more on scoring than running a point, and you definitely can't have questionable shot selection. That's why I don't like point guards, freshman point guards, going into the NBA, because I don't think they have enough experience. Your thoughts, Jeff?
Well, you know, he was a special talent, but Isaiah Thomas came into the NBA after only 1 year at Indiana, but mm-hmm. he was a very special talent. Thing is, LaVine did play at a big school and a big conference at UCLA, And, you know, some schools like UCLA have delusional fans because the UCLA fans think they're still in the 70s, you know?
Yep.
I mean, they think they still should be winning every year, even though they don't quite have that same level of talent anymore. And, and that does happen sometimes with college fans, you know? And UCLA is one of those places.
All right, Jeff, we come to the end of the show. We got about 10 seconds left in the show. Is there anything that you want to put out there before we get, jump off of there?
You know, I hate to be negative, but talking about the young men in the draft, you know, I'm the kind of person, I like to see other people be successful and so on and so forth. And, you know, yeah, these young men, they're going to make some mistakes, hopefully nothing too bad. And the thing you want to avoid is probably the biggest NBA draft-associated tragedy was almost 30 years ago. Len Bias was number two pick in the draft, and everybody said he was going to be the next great player in the league, you know, comparing him to Dr. J, and he celebrated with his friends and was messing around with cocaine and passed away very sadly. And one of the many things bad about dying that young from drugs is even if you weren't a big user, you'll always be known as a druggie, you know? And I mean, I don't think he was an addict, but he was a user, and, you know, that's the thing you never want to see happen to anybody, you know, whether they play basketball or not. And that Len Bias thing is a tragedy, and I remember a few years ago I had some younger coworkers who had never even heard of Len Bias, and it made me feel old. But, you know, these people are still learning. Yeah,
I mean,
those things happen once in a while at work. They don't mean to do it, but they make you feel old. And I'm the kind of person, you know, I like to know the history and whatever. I've always been like that, but not everybody is, you know. So, but hopefully, you know, I'll tell you another sad story. He wasn't drinking, but he was in a bad accident very early in his NBA career. Remember the big man from Seton Hall, Ramon Ramos, in the late 80s? I think he was on the team that went to the Final Four.
Right.
I think he was about a 6'10 center from Puerto Rico. He got drafted, I think, in the second round by Portland. Got in a really bad car wreck, and fortunately, he survived, but I don't think he was ever able to play basketball again. And it's a shame. He was a good guy and a good student. And, you know, especially the international students at some schools like Seton Hall have a reputation for not being there to study. But he actually did study, had a good GPA, and I think he even got a degree. And, you know, car accident, not his fault, and you know, so that's a life is like that. You got to be careful, you know.
You never know. That's what I was always saying, that you never know what's going to happen, and you got to take care of yourself because of the things can happen in a blink of an eye. A blink of an eye can change your whole life. So, all right, people, we're out of here. Tune in next week. Jeff, I want to thank you for coming on board this week. It's always been a pleasure. We're going to be back here next week, people. Same time, same station, same bat channel, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tune in on Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where Vic and I will be on the FSP show. We're going to be talking about the AFC North. We're going down each division and getting our thoughts in on what their record's going to be, and also some, not all, some fantasy implications for each team. And then quite naturally, on Sunday, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, myself will be there all by my widow self on the master plan. We're going to be talking about start talking about fantasy. Let me put it that way. I'm not going to get in depth on it until probably the middle of July. But I think talking about some World Cup, talking about some NBA, even the remnants of what's left of the draft, talking about players moving out. We'll be talking about a whole bunch of things that have been going on within the past week. So give us a call back on one of those days, and we'll be glad to talk to you at any time. With that being said, enjoy the rest of the week and the weekend, and we're out.
Yeah. It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, yeah.